However, as I say, we didn't see much of him, or of anyone else for that matter. They kept me pretty well confined to one wing of the house, and although there must have been servants, I never saw one except the old butler. There wasn't a woman in the place, which was a dead bore. And when I suggested to Rudy that he might whistle up a wench or two to pass the evenings, he just shook his head and said it was out of the question. "Your Highness must contain yourself in patience," says he. "May I respectfully remind you that your wedding is not far off?" "Thanks very much," says I. "And may I respectfully remind you that I'm feeling randified now, and in no mood to hold myself in until my wedding to some young German cow, who probably looks like a bosun's mate." "Your Highness need have no fears on that score," says he, and he showed me a portrait of Duchess Irma of Strakens, which I must say cheered me up considerably. She looked very young, and she had one of those cold, narrow, disdainful faces that you find on girls who've always had their own way. But she was a beauty, no question. Her hair was long and blonde, and her features very fine and regular. She made me think of a story I remember from my childhood about a snow princess who had a heart of ice. Well, I could warm this one up, always assuming our enterprise got that far. "In the meantime," says I, "what say to some nice, hearty country girl? She could teach me some more German, you know, and I could teach her anatomy." But he wouldn't hear of it. So the weeks ran by, and I suppose that gradually the nightmare impossibility of my position must have begun to seem less incredible than it looks now, half a century after. Whatever happens to you, however far-fetched you get used to it eventually, I found, and when the time came to leave Schönhausen, I was ready for it. I was in a fair funk, of course, but so heartily thankful to be getting out of that draughty mausoleum that even the ordeal ahead seemed endurable. It must have been a week or so after the meeting with Bismarck that I've just described that I was summoned late one evening to his library. They were all there, Rudy, Bismarck, and the three wise men, and I knew at once that something was up. Bismarck was still in his greatcoat, with the last snowflakes melting on its shoulders, and a little pool of water forming round each boot as he stood before the fire. He looked me over bleakly, hands behind his back, and then says, "The scars are still too livid. Any fool can see they are recent." This seemed an excellent reason to me for calling off the whole thing, but Kraftstein said in his ponderous way that he could attend to them. He had a salve which could disguise their pinkness and make them look like old wounds. This seemed to satisfy Bismarck, for he grunted and turned to Rudy. "Otherwise, he is ready. He can play the part. Your head depends on this, remember."
"His Highness is ready to resume his duties," says Rudy.
Bismarck snorted. "His Highness, he is an actor hired to play a part. Better he should remember that, and the consequences of missing a cue. He'd be less liable to bungle it. Oh, yes, Bersonin, I know all about your theories. I prefer realities. And the reality of this, Mr. Flashman, is that tomorrow you leave for Strakens. You know what is to do, the reward of success, and the price of failure." His cold eyes played over me. "Are you dismayed?"
"Oh, no," says I. "When it's all over, I intend to go back to England and take the place of Prince Albert, don't you know?